views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines that I call USA Inc. Today's date is December the 1st, last month of the year. It is 2015, 2016 to be here. Before you know it, I swear time just goes. I don't know if time goes by faster as you approach 50 years old or, you know, I don't know. But it just seems like time is just going by so fast for me. Part of that might have to do with the fact that I have grandchildren now. And, you know, those grandchildren continue to grow up and they continue to have birthdays and whatnot. And it just makes it seem like time is just going by so fast. So, wow, you know, 2015 is almost at an end. Well, I hope that my voice finds you safe and sound behind these enemy lines, because it is Battlefield America out there. And unfortunately, on battlefields, casualties are created. We do have a guest scheduled for today's program. Looking forward to speaking to Miss Nataki of Let's Buy Black 365 Movement. We have linked to that website if you want to check it out. That's Let's Buy Black 365.com. She should be joining us here in just about 7 minutes or so. Just to give you a bit of information about this movement. It's more than a website, it's a movement. And the movement is comprised of a group of concerned citizens organizing locally and nationally towards black economic, political, and overall justice. This community has resources for everyone, the general public, business owners and professionals, and local organizers. Is comes from the description of the group from their website. Again, that is letsbuyblack365.com. We will be discussing various topics related to their mission, related to overall black economic empowerment, which some say, and I would tend to agree with them, that black economic power, if that economic power is used properly, leads to political power. And of course, politics control just about everything in a country. So if you have political power, then you can also empower yourself socially. If you have any questions or comments that you would like to ask of the guests or share with us, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Let me give out those telephone numbers. The telephone numbers are 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. That's 549-032-POUND. Once you dialed in, you can choose to just hang out on the line and listen. Perhaps you don't have a smartphone and that's your only means of tuning in, because you know when this program is coming on. You can also use the web-based Flash phone if you have a pair of headsets with a mic. Just click on the button that says call the show. Enter in the same phone numbers. You don't have to put the pound sign, but you do need to enter the participant code. That'll connect you to our conference line. You can also give us a call on the studio line, which is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. The other way that you can communicate with us is to use the little chat box that has been put on Black Talk Radio. I think I put that on there last week. You can communicate through the chat box. Yesterday I was having issues with it, but it is fixed. It appears to be working, and it appears I have some messages in here, and I'll go ahead and read these because, you know, sometimes we have questions and other people had the same question. So I'll go ahead and read these and answer those, but I'll also reply to them after the program to the individuals who sent the messages through the chat box. One Love is asking that once I get a chance to please send an email to let them know how to send support by mail. So I'm assuming that they're talking about snail mail, you know, the U.S. Postal Service and whatnot. And that information is on our page in the, let me just double check and make sure, in the About section, it will have our physical mailing address. Of course, you would make out money orders or checks to Black Talk Media Project. We are a North Carolina-based nonprofit here in the state of North Carolina. Kind of repeating myself there. But that address, it would be Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. You can spell Mount Holly either M-T period and Holly, H-O-L-L-Y, or you could spell it out M-O-U-N-T. Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. We appreciate all the support that we have been getting over the year. Another person, this would be Denisha. Denisha, good day to you. Denisha says that she's in Boston, Massachusetts, and she is able to listen to this station via another station. Does she need to tune in via the internet during a live show or just in general? Yes, I would recommend that you go to our website, blacktalkradionetwork.com. That way you'll know of any upcoming programs for those programs that don't have a regular scheduled time. You can find out if they have an upcoming program that's going to be, you know, and what time it's going to air live. But I would say in general, yes, come to the website if you're able. We're also on TuneIn. You can get, if you have a TuneIn app on your smartphone, but I would say that blacktalkradionetwork.com, the website, is an adaptive website, and it will adapt to any kind of technology that you're using, whether that's a desktop, smartphone, tablet, Mac computer. It adapts to fit the screen of whatever device you're listening to. So again, I would recommend coming to blacktalkradionetwork.com, not just to listen to Black Talk Radio Network's digital radio station, but we have digital radio stations operated by some of our media partners that you can access as well. It's pretty interesting, though. This isn't the first time I've heard of our programming being aired on terrestrial radio stations. And, you know, a lot of times I don't even know about it, but it's not that I take issue with that. But a lot of times I find out that we have radio stations out there that's picking up some of our programming and airing it on their stations. That's totally fine. That's fine with us. They should just be warned every once in a while. You might hear some cuss words and whatnot. So, that's interesting. And this is public radio, meaning that it is listener-funded radio. And so our mission is to get our message in this programming out to as many people as possible. So I'm not worried about collecting any fees or anything like that for people rebroadcasting our content. That's why we got the share buttons and all of that, you know, the podcast where you can embed the podcast on your own website. So, you know, that's not a problem, but I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to hear that a radio station in Boston, Massachusetts is picking up Black Talk Radio programming. That's good news. That's good news. All right. Let me see. In the chat box, I'm seeing that Sister Nataki is there. Sis, if you want to give us a call at 704-951-5030, we will go ahead and get you connected to the program. Sometimes when I'm typing in here, it is not taking one thing. I'm going to have to look at that chat box later. But yeah, if you want to go ahead and give us a call, that studio line is open. Let's see. I do have a couple of news items that I want to share after our conversation about Let's Buy Black 365 movement. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel trying to save himself from the fallout over the citywide cover-up of the murder of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald, who was murdered over a year ago in Chicago by a police officer who has complaints, who had prior complaints on him about excessive force as well as racism, practicing racism, using racial slurs to refer to people while he was brutalizing them. It was announced today that the Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy has been fired by Mayor Rahm Emanuel in the city of Chicago. That is a appointed position. It is not an elected position. So he was totally appointed by Rahm Emanuel. But I'm like some other activists out there that I know in Chicago, Mark Clements for one, that more than McCarthy needs to go, Rahm Emanuel himself needs to go. And as I think I discussed yesterday about the secret payout in hush money to the woman who gave birth to Laquan McDonald. So Rahm Emanuel is all up in it. He's part of the conspiracy, and he needs to go as well. I echo those sentiments by some Chicago activists. Donald Trump. Yesterday, we talked about Donald Trump being rebuked by black religious leaders yesterday. Ben Carson, who is the other leading candidate for the GOP nomination, needs a similar rebuke that Donald Trump got from black religious leaders. Carson continues to minimize police terrorism and racism taking place across the USA. I made a clip of the forum he participated in at Allen University in South Carolina, and we'll take a listen to that. And I'm starting to have thoughts about Ben Carson. I wonder if Ben Carson is the victim of a lot of misinformation, and I'll talk more about that. The telephone number again for the studio line is 704-951-5030. That is 704. I don't know why this chat box isn't taking my messages when I type them in there, but it seems to be working for everybody else. So what's going on? So that's 704-951-5030, 704-951-5030. I'll tell you what, Sister Nataki, if you're having issues, let me pull up your telephone number and see if I can call you on the number that I last spoke with you on and see if we can get this worked out. Okay, I think this is her. Area code 301, who do we have?
This is Nataki.
Hey, Sister Nataki. Sorry about the confusion about the number, but glad that you could get connected with us today. Looking forward to having this conversation with you. As you know, Black Friday has come and gone. We don't know what those numbers look like in terms of sales, and we hope that they are lower than they were last year. So I'm just excited to have this conversation with you, but not just about boycotting Black Friday, but because of, you know, the movement that you're part of, the Let's Buy Black 365 movement. I'm wholeheartedly behind that and have been, you know, a participant in similar grassroots movement to make black dollars matter. As I came across something on Facebook, somebody said, let's make these black dollars matter. So excited to have you on the program. Did you have any opening comments that you wanted to share before we get started?
Just really excited to be here. Very excited about, you know, we're talking about a movement to patronize Black-owned businesses, enterprises, and institutions, and we're having a conversation on a Black radio network, which is just powerful in and of itself. So just really, really excited to be here, and also excited that I see that one of our other organizers, Denisha from Boston, is on the line. So excited about this conversation, and we'll take it from here.
Okay. I seen the message that she had left in the chat room and whatnot, and I hope she was able to hear that, because I found out some of our programming is also aired in Australia on a terrestrial network in Australia. So we're always happy to find out that our programming is reaching people all over the planet. So that was, thank you for sharing that information. So let's go ahead and jump into this, the movement. Now, I posted the description, and the description said that it's a group of concerned citizens organizing locally and nationally towards black economic, political, and overall justice. It has resources for everyone, the general public, business owners, and professionals and local organizers. So let me ask you this, Sister Nataki, how did this particular movement come about, and how long have you been a part of it?
So this movement came about through a couple of different iterations. There were some conversations that happened in early to mid 2014 around the need to organize economically within our community across the country primarily, but really largely throughout the diaspora, but focusing first on getting ourselves right and then, you know, working around this, around the rest of the world. And, many of us, began to go out and do some things with other groups. And, those efforts were good. The challenge was that, the perception was that the groups that we elected to get involved in to make that difference didn't appear to be moving the ball as fast as we wanted them to. I've joked with several people that I felt myself going to meetings for the sake of meetings without leaving with having anything accomplished. And the next meeting would be about the last meeting we had to talk about the future meeting. And so it just felt like something more significant and more galvanizing needed to happen, because we as a people don't have the luxury of, you know, not being completely proactive in this fight or quest for liberation under some of these issues, especially around the economic disparities and some of the challenges going on. And so I was definitely part of that group that had the initial concept last year. And then it was earlier this year that we said, well, you know, if we're not seeing the entities or vehicles that we can support to do these kinds of efforts, you know, let's bring the team together and work with our network to, you know, transition this from just an idea to an actual grassroots movement. And so I've been in on this since since then, and have been, you know, one of the I guess main people who is actively working. And we're really excited that, you know, since then, many others have come on board as organizers from various places. So as I mentioned, Denisha's on the line from Boston, and she's, you know, relatively new to the group, but has jumped in, is already, you know, doing incredible things. And, she's working with another new organizer, Dwayne, who is in the DC, Maryland area. They're working on a project together, and he and I are going to be on another program later this evening, with your assistant Cece. So we're excited about that. And then there are other organizers, who are doing things in Illinois and Texas and, California and, you know, most recently, Atlanta and North Carolina. I feel like I'm leaving out states. I always start the list and then hesitate doing that because I forget where everyone is and don't want to leave anyone out. But, you know, that's sort of where we are in terms of how we came to be and how it exists in its current form now. And this has all happened just in what we're calling the pre-launch. So we haven't even, you know, gone full-fledged, out, you know, letting people know about the movement.
You know, I have noticed, again, I've been doing, you know, this sort of radio, informing the public and talking about political, social, economic issues from a black perspective since about 2007. So I'm always trying to, you know, keep plugged into the different things that's happening, you know, throughout the African diaspora. And I have to say, that while this isn't the first such movement that I have heard of over the, you know, years and whatnot, but it does seem different this year. It seems to be more energetic. It seems to be more people involved, and if not involved, recognizing the need for such a movement. Have you noticed the same? And if so, what would you attribute this renewed passion in buying black and supporting black businesses?
Well, I think you touched on a couple of things even within the question. I think many of us, and I've definitely felt this, and maybe you know, maybe it's the audience that would gravitate to it, but you know, as we put out a call to action for other organizers, other people to take on an organizing role in their area, the people who we found have been doing this for years. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much that it's a new concept, but I do think, and one of the things that people have said is the point I just mentioned, is that they felt like it was time, but that they were also you know, tired of inaction or tired of, you know, being involved with things that talk about, economic empowerment, but aren't tangibly doing anything about it. And so again, that's from the organizer level. And I think it does take a certain kind of personality to be someone who's organizing, in any capacity. But, beyond those persons, I think the reason it seems to resonate more this year is because people are finally starting to put, you know, connect the dots on these concepts of how lack of economic unity is directly related to all these other things that are happening to us and assaults on the black community, especially when it comes to, you know, what social media has just made more, more visible in terms of the violent, you know, terroristic shootings, of unarmed black men and women and all these things. And so I think, you know, you have a combination of social media making something that's been happening since slavery, during slavery, visible with, you know, camera phones and technology. So technology has played a part, a significant part, because, you know, those of us who were willing to ignore or try and justify or bury our heads in the sand and say, well, maybe he did something wrong. Well, maybe, you know, maybe he didn't, you know, maybe, you know, blame the victim. Can't do that with the video evidence that, wow, this person did nothing, said they were doing nothing, weren't, you know, had their hands in the air and they were still or were running away, all of these things. And you hear the stories about, you know, people are devastated about the 16 shots, but, you know, these are not new stories. There have been 12 shots and 10 shots and 2 shots and 41 shots. I mean, the bullet count is really irrelevant in the big picture, but it's starting to wake people up.
Thank you.
And as they're waking up, they're realizing, well, what can I do about it? And the marching and the protesting is good and it's needed in some sense, but we also need to galvanize ourselves and organize ourselves economically so that we can have some political options.
I agree that there is more awareness, but like you stated, this has been going on. For example, somebody shared a very informed post. This came from Chuck Baldwin, who is a suspected white racist, who's associated with the Oath Keepers. But regardless of his background, the words that he spoke in an article that he published about, you know, what's going on in the Middle East right now, how the United States is really ultimately behind all of this terrorism and whatnot. But like I was telling somebody else, the thing with Chuck Baldwin, as he tries to warn white people about the coming police state, is that police state has always existed in this country for non-white people, going back to the creation of the first police department in Boston, Massachusetts, in the 1600s. And that's what a lot of them don't get. And I'm like, you know, the coming police state, it's been here for hundreds of years. What are you talking about? So you're concerned about your rights and stuff being trampled by the powers that be, the government institutions and their attack dogs, also known as police. But, you know, at the same time, when you see it happening to black people all across this country, you know, you want to deny that it's happening. But like you said, Sister Nataki, you know, there's undeniable evidence now. You can say that this isn't happening, it's a figment of our imagination, but no one's going to find you credible when there are literally hundreds of videos coming out every year showing us all of this murder and going on by the police terrorists. Now, one of the things that I think you made a connection to is that I think that economics plays a big role in empowering yourself, not just financially, not just economically, but that's directly tied to what kind of political power you're going to have. Of course, politics controls just about every people activity area there is on the planet. And so that will also pertain to what kind of social empowerment that you have. So I think it's not enough to say that we just need, you know, spend our dollars wisely and whatnot in terms of consumers and, you know, purchasing as much as possible from black businesses. But that in turn, if that revenue that is generated for the businesses that are entrepreneurs and whatnot are able to then acquire resources, that then we do have a responsibility as business owners, just like in other communities, to then use some of that wealth to impact the political empowerment of our people, which will then lead to our overall social empowerment. Do you have any thoughts on that? Sister Nataki, are you there? I think you might have muted yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now.
Yes. Yes, I was saying, yeah, that's exactly what the Let's Buy Black 365 movement is about, it's about not just, it's not just about spending money. So, you know, if I could, someone asked yesterday, well, you know, is there a connection with the boycott movement? And there is a connection in the sense that, you know, as people are saying, I am not spending with, you know, companies that, don't support me, don't hire me, that are, you know, are giving money to people who are terrorizing me and et cetera, et cetera. That is fantastic. And the other side of that coin is now that I am waking up to how important it is to be conscious of to whom I give my dollars, I then now need resources for who can I give my money to that does support me. And so Let's Buy Black 365 is designed to be a resource for people to make, you know, to have that option and have that opportunity. And it's coming at it from a little bit different of an angle than some other ventures may have pursued. And I say that to say that, you know, there are, I think because so many people are waking up, there is, you know, there are a lot of directory type companies and services that are springing up. And, you know, for us, we think that's a great thing because Black people have historically made excuses about not patronizing Black owned business. And one of the primary excuses has been, well, I don't know where they are. So, the more people are posting and sharing, you know, directories that they have compiled, the less and less that becomes a reasonable excuse.
Right.
The other side of that and the part that is a little different than the way others are pursuing it, is that, those directories, for the most part, tend to be businesses that are in existence, as businesses should be, to make money off of the information. And that's great. We, you know, again, we want those kind, we want thriving Black businesses. The way that we're approaching this from the directory part of the movement is from a crowdsourcing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, many people are familiar with the concept of crowdfunding, which is where a bunch of individuals contribute a little bit at a time and, you know, and can make a big difference in their individual efforts. Crowdsourcing is similar, but instead of it being money, it's everyone contributing, the same kind of information. And so this is a resource where all Black people can go in and say, hey, I know one Black business, or I know five, or I know 10, or I know 50.
Mm-hmm.
And they can add those businesses to a directory and share the knowledge with other people in their city, in their town, in their state, or who may be traveling to their area. And so this it truly becomes a wider network, and it truly puts the power in the hand of the individual to say, I want to contribute to not only the resource, then I want to utilize that resource so that I can help empower my community. Because once we have, you know, part one is to identify where the businesses are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I can share more about, you know, the other parts that make this movement a little bit deeper than just the companies.
Right. And we'll do that on the other side. We're going to take a short station identification break and play a clip of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King. I think also included in that is Marcus Garvey, and listen to them talking about Black economic empowerment. Do want to let everyone know you are welcome to call in to the program. There are several ways that you can reach us. In the conference room, that is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. If you would like to ask a question, make a comment, join the conversation, hit star 6 and 1 on your telephone keypad. That will send me a signal, or else I'll assume that you're just listening, as we have many listeners who just listen to the program that way. The studio line, that's 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. And, of course, you can also submit your questions or your comments to the new chat box that we have on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. Just want to remind you to check out the website that's linked for you in today's program description. That's lessbyblack365.com. Again, that's lessbyblack365.com, which is what we are discussing today with our guest, Ms. Nataki. We will be back on the other side. Stay tuned.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
American Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year, which is more than all of the exports of the United States. And more than the national budget of Canada. Did you know that? That's power right there, if we know how to prove.
We should own and operate and control the economy of our community. We have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a rundown community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar.
We've got to strengthen black institutions. I call upon you to take your money out of the banks downtown and deposit your money in Tri-State Bank. We are telling you to follow what we are doing. Put your money there. You have 6 or 7 black insurance companies here. Take out your insurance there. Now, these are some practical things that we can do. We begin the process of building a greater economic base. We've got to give ourselves to this struggle until the end. We've got to see it through.
So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community, what we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community.
The black man must unite in one grand racial hierarchy, making a racial empire upon which the sun shall never set. Be black, white, black, he's black, and all of them are
American Negro collectively is richer than most nations of the world. We have an annual income of more than $30 billion a year.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this mic from behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc. We are speaking with Ms. Nataki of Let's Buy Black 365 Movement. Remember, you can visit their website at lessbyblack365.com. Before we talk a little bit more about some of the other resources available, what happened? What happened to that movement? As we just heard in that clip, we heard Marcus Garvey, who was forced into exile outside this country, Martin Luther King Jr., we heard from Malcolm X, both of which who were assassinated. And it seems that, like, you know, the movement to buy black as well as to start black businesses kind of died with them. You got any thoughts on that, Sister Nataki? What happened?
Yeah, well, I'm sure, as you know, and from previous conversations we've had, we could have a whole hour just on that. But the short answer is that people who are against the success of our people made concerted efforts to cut off the head of the movement so that the movement would die.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that has been nice about the way that this and other movements are structured is that they're flat organizations. There is no head. Each person has the power within their own mind, within their own network, within their own house, family, and space. So just like I talked about the crowdsourcing idea, again, with crowdfunding being about money, crowdsourcing isn't about money at all. It's just, what information do I have? And how can I seek out more information to be able to contribute in a concerted way? It takes away, it brings us together without having, you know, one person who's identified as the leader who can be, you know, we've seen not just people, you know, assassinated like Dr. King and Brother Malcolm, but we've seen, as you said, the exile and the financial attacks with Marcus Garvey. We've seen others who have been discredited and other things. But when you take away that one person approach to let's identify this one person with the movement, that goes away. And so, you know, there are many of us who are spokespeople for the movement, but we're not leaders. We're, you know, we all have the power, and that can be anyone. You know, there was a sister who called who said, I know 50 Black-owned businesses, and I just found out about you guys. I'm going to load those into the directory. She has the power. Anybody at home, you know, I know we don't want any on-air dead time, but take a second right now and just think of a number of how many Black-owned businesses that you know that are 50% Black-owned, at least, and that you've used either, you know, in your city, their state, or traveled to, or used online that other Black people would want to know about. You know, just ballpark number. And if, you know, if you're not at work or something, say the number out loud to yourself. I know I pulled together a list, and, you know, I may have made more of an effort than others. So my list and my number may be different than your list and your number, and it doesn't matter. You know, if you have one, that one could be the source for, you know, dozens of other people. And that's what this is about, making the power and the information part of in putting it in everyone's hands.
Right. In terms of a list, my personal list, I have not been making one because I just go to places like listbyblack365.com as well as some other websites that have those sort of databases. But what I have been working on is my local list. Local. See, I live in a county that's over 80% white. There are not a whole lot of Black businesses, but you know, when I'm able to find out about one, I always ask them for their card or you know, I try to share that information with other people here locally. Did you know so-and-so had a plumbing service? Yeah, give them a call. Stop calling so-and-so over here. You know, let's support this Black man and his son that have this plumbing business and whatnot. So that's what my challenge has been, and what I personally been trying to do is connect with local businesses in this predominantly white area that I live in. I mean, you know, while it is 80% Black, I mean, white, there's still a lot of Black people here. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, we kind of like have our own little communities and enclaves and whatnot. And hell, we spend money. We need services and whatnot. And so I think we could do a better job in these predominantly white areas and supporting these Black businesses. Another thing I want to throw into the mix is, for example, we had been forced to use this white business, and we went through a couple of them. to service like our air conditioning unit or whatnot. So then my sister has a relative from Detroit who's now living down here, and he's working for one of those white companies, but he's doing the same work on the side under the table. And I brought him out, you know, and I was totally happy with, you know, he did as good as job as I hope, you know, he's doing on the other job for his employer. And, you know, he also shared a whole lot of inside information with us, you know, in confirming how the last person that was out here tried to cheat us out our money and, you know, tried to act like he did some work and didn't do any work and whatnot. So I also try to support the so-called street mechanic as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what you're doing is exactly what we're talking about, because there are many of us, you know, I've been doing that for years too, and I think it came out of coming from a home where that was just done. You know, my parents network and know everybody under the sun, and so I'm used to, you know, being in that kind of environment, and the way this movement really gives power, you know, even more power to people who are prone to do that is, you know, we even if we are public, you know, spokespeople or, you know, in the public light, we can't talk to everyone. And, you know, that one conversation is good, but, you know, I've had people who call me and be like, oh yeah, I just did such and such. And I'll be like, oh, did you use the company I told you about? And I'm like, oh, I forgot. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's not centralized. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm not giving them the information. It's not that they weren't excited about it when they heard it, but how do we make something centralized so that impact that we have is not just the one time, but it's an ongoing communication, because, you know, there's a reason that, you know, companies like these soda companies spend, you know, millions and billions of dollars on advertising. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a great case study when you look at what happened with Coca-Cola and Pepsi. Coca-Cola kind of got a little bit lax on its advertising because they were like, we're known worldwide. You know, we don't even need to really advertise because everybody knows who Coca-Cola is. And that's how Pepsi was able to get 50% of the market share, because people will forget you if you're not in a centralized platform. And so this is about really taking the efforts that you do on what it sounds like a broad scale, or even the efforts that somebody might do for the one or two businesses that they know, and put it in a place where others can tap into that and others will remember to tap into it, because it's in front of them all the time as a resource.
Now, before we took the break and I asked that additional question about what happened, you were going to share some of the other resources that you have on letsbuyblack365.com. So if you want to continue to share that information.
Yeah, definitely. And really, you know, what I think I can best answer your question by sharing what the overall goal of the movement is. Okay. and what we're trying to achieve. There's a about the movement section on the website, and it outlines five goals. And I'll share with you those five goals now, which are: one, to empower people through committed Black-owned businesses; two, to create vehicles to empower young people with opportunities for the present and future, and we definitely will come back to that point; three, to strengthen consumer confidence in Black businesses; four, infuse capital in targeted enterprises that can increase the availability of sustainable jobs and career opportunities for our people; and five, be a hub for dialogue and action around economic empowerment. So the directory is a vehicle to all of these things. And I think that this is not a directory but some things with it. This is a movement about these things, and the directory and the online network that we have are really the ways that we are achieving these goals.
Now, I don't know if this is part of your goals or part of the movement, so I'm basically asking, And in this statement, I'm asking a question in this statement I'm about to make, but as a black owned business, even though we are a nonprofit, we still operate as a business, providing services and whatnot, you know, to increase, you know, the amount of resources that we can utilize outside of the donations that we get as a nonprofit. We do provide services. But I feel like as a black business owner, I have I should be committed. Even as a business owner, I should be committed to recycling the black dollars that I spend, you know, as a business, because businesses need, you know, as well to, you know, utilize services. They also need to purchase their products, that whether they're a retailer, they getting those products from somebody wholesale or whatnot.
Exactly.
And then also on the other side, the social justice piece, you know, like, for example, this is going back to my question about what happened. Well, we can say, what happened to the NAACP? Well, the NAACP, you know, and I'm not disparaging them as an organization, because I know they have different chapters, you know, on the county level, on the state level. And I have met some of those people, and they're doing great work. They're doing it. I couldn't ask them to be more conscious or to do anything different than they're already doing. But when I look at the national headquarters and I see that, you know, a lot of your funding, if not the majority of your funding, is coming from Bank of America, Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan, any of these corporations that we should be boycotting. You know what I'm saying? When I look at the Al Sharpton's National Action Network, and I look at who's sponsoring these conferences and what. Well, that's what happened right there. He who pays the piper names the tune. It's a simple way to say it. So as a black person, as a black business owner, as resources are provided to me, I have a responsibility to then recycle, you know, those resources and make them available, you know, to the rest of the community in different ways.
Right. And that brings up a really great point. So in order to add a business to the directory, you do have to log in, and you know, that puts a little bit of a barrier so that people can't, you know, people have to go through at least a couple of steps and won't add businesses with no accountability. And so, you know, we definitely have like verifiable email accounts, et cetera, to, you know, to know who's posting. But once you create an account and you can add a business, there is a field that I have the website up on my computer here. There is a field that asks for additional info, and it says this information will be added in the business details section, and it asks the target market is for the company, and it asks, is this a business to business company? Is it business to consumer, or is it both? Because the point of this is exactly what you talked about. This is for individuals to be able to find quality goods and services that they need and want from black-owned businesses that they may not have known even existed before, and to share the businesses that they know so that other people can make the same kind through that. But it's also a place that businesses can say, hey, I didn't know there was a vendor who did this. I can maybe get some supplies or products from this company now. So you bring up a really great point. As a business owner, I think we should all have that accountability, but many of us don't. And I won't say it's okay, but the fact that it exists, that people don't always do it because of personal responsibility. Some are only motivated by convenience, or only motivated by money, or only motivated by some other things. We're taking all of the excuses away and saying, hey, if you're motivated by convenience, here it is in one place. Mm-hmm. Or if you're motivated by, you know, all the other things, you know, if you want to know how good the business is first, if you want to, whatever it is, this makes it available to you so that and then because we have other incentives to make it beneficial for individuals, I think, you know, we have some prizes and some, there's certain like, giveaways that happen when people are actively participating in this movement. And that's designed, you know, some of us are doing this because we would do it no matter what. You know, I'm doing this because I want to help our people. But some people are like, I'm only going to do it because I get a prize at the end. And that's okay too. As long as, you know, unity is unity, even if some of us are doing it for different reasons. You know, the fact that we are coming together and doing something that has an overall positive objective is amazing.
It contributes toward the same goal.
Yeah, I did want to share that. And then to answer your other question, you know, in broader terms, this is about really growing a resource. And I mentioned I was going to come back to one of those purpose statements about significance of the youth. And I really, really, you know, can't highlight enough how significant that purpose is. And as I've shared, many times, you know, when I see the young people and the students who have been protesting and boycotting at various universities around the country, and even the young people who came out for Black Friday and who are tweeting about boycotting and really standing up, that word you mentioned, accountability, really comes to mind, in that we post college have accountability to, you know, everybody says, well, we should just, you know, create our own businesses. And it's not realistic that every Black person in the country is going to be an entrepreneur.
Right.
There are so many factors in terms of just basic economics and basic capitalism, and even just, you know, education, resources, capital. You can't have a thriving community of 100% entrepreneurs.
Right.
We also need people with good jobs and good skills and good management positions and good executive positions and good leadership and board member positions in future generations. And the way that we can do that is not by telling people to go to school and get a good job, but maybe we tell them to go to school and get a good job because we have jobs available, because we have made concerted efforts to fortify the businesses that are in our community. And so that's what this movement is really about, because when you look at other communities who plan for decades and sometimes centuries in advance, and then you compare it to the Black community that doesn't prepare at all, we don't have a 5-year plan or a 5-year plan or a 2-year or 1-year plan. And then we're trying to compete. And then we're frankly, we have the expectation and almost get indignant when other people don't have jobs for us.
Right. And you know, I was just thinking about that too. You know, the last presidential election with Mitt Romney, you know, the term has been used a lot since then about job creators. And yeah, we need to get a 1% these tax breaks because they're the job creators and whatnot. And you know, I'm just sitting here as I was listening to you talk about it, thinking, you know, that yeah, we need to be the job creators in our own community and not looking to these so-called 1%ers like a Mitt Romney or, you know, a corporation like CVS or you know, name a corporation to provide jobs in our community. That we have to be everything that we want to see in our community. We need to do it. And there's just really no excuse except for maybe lack of information, lack of education, and but I think that, you know, by
a combination of the two, I think
it's
lack of information and lack of education, and I think that's why that's the crux of what we're talking about. There's information in this platform, but then it's also so there's information and education. It's also balancing it. You know, someone commented that, you know, just hearing about the topic, they thought, you know, this was going to be like a website that was really heavy and like, and super political. And it's like, well, you know, we're about getting it done. It doesn't, you know, who says that, you know, being an advocate for your people necessarily has to be dreary, you know.
Right.
I'm having fun meeting, you know, these brothers and sisters who are doing amazing things. You know, this, you know, it's not about the fun. You know, we should do it even if it's not fun, but I will tell you, it is so invigorating to come across brothers and sisters who are active, who can take action, who can just pick up something and, you know, come up with great ideas and carry them out. You know, just to see the unity in action that we don't really get to see has been so uplifting just for me personally. That, you know, I am super excited. And I think that's one of the reasons why this movement is galvanizing, because, you know, historically, and, you know, just not just within, you know, movements within the Black community or some of the Black social justice or Black environmental justice types of movements, but movements in general can and do tend to be really dreary, because the reason they exist is because we're attacking a very serious problem.
Right, right.
But, you know, in the attack on the problem, you know, we can do and find creative ways to achieve the same end.
Right.
And I think because of that, that's why so many young people are getting on board and saying, like, how can I be an organizer, or how can I be an ambassador, or how can I get the word out? And that whole thought process is where the idea came from. When you go to the website, you'll see that there is a spoken word contest that's gone on. It started on Friday, Black Friday, purposefully, because it's a contest to highlight, you know, the issue we have around Black economic empowerment, or the lack of our power. And the whole purpose of the contest is to incentivize, either seasoned poets or spoken word artists or hip hop artists or young people to come up with a piece, around economic empowerment and perform it in a 2 or 3 minute video. Perform it, and people will, you know, they upload and people watch and vote. And we've got, you know, a celebrity guest judge, Professor Griff, who many people know from Public Enemy.
And we have, actually, from North Carolina, your neck of the woods, two very well-known
artists in that area and nationwide, Elliot Axiom and Dasana Hanu, who lead poetry slams all over the country. Are all judges in this contest, all about who has the most powerful message about the solution to the problem around economics for Black people. And so we're, you know, this creates a dialogue. It's creative. It, you know, it engages people from all over the country to talk about a subject. It's not dreary. You know, it's fun. You know, I'm so excited. We keep hearing about, you know, people are telling us they're writing about, you know, stuff, and they're going to submit soon, or, you know, I just did my next take of the video. I think I'm going to, and so, you know, we can and have, you know, come up with incredible ideas. Tish, who is based out of North Carolina, came up with a fantastic idea that is so fun that I just can't wait until that project starts. There's a sister who is working on something related to members, and, you know, I'm looking forward to our meeting tonight just to hear about what, you know, what is going to come out of, you know, the research that she's doing. I mentioned both Denisha and Dwayne, and I didn't mention Kala, who are working on something around reading and literature. And so, you know, all of these things are exciting, and the common thread is that they are both about something incredibly serious that we need to happen, but it's done in a way that, you know, we're having fun while we're doing it, and we're still making an incredible difference in our community.
Well, that's all wonderful to hear. And you mentioned the poetry contest. When is the deadline for that, so people will know how much time they got to submit their entries?
Yeah. Well, the first thing to do if you're interested in the poetry contest is, one, go to the website. All the information, the contest description, the details, the voting, the judges panel, all of that information is there on the site. And because it's an online poetry contest, you can go right there and upload and then join the group so that you can vote on the videos. But it started November 27th, and I think the deadline for submissions is December 23rd. And it says voting will take place from November 27th to December 30th. And so from December 30th to midnight on the 31st, the judges are going to review the top voted videos and then announce the winner on January 1st, which of course is the last day of Kwanzaa. And then it'll go from there.
Sounds very, very fun, as you stated, and you're exactly right. I'm part of the New Abolitionist Movement, which started when we created a program called New Abolitionist Radio and looking at 21st century slavery and human trafficking, because the 13th Amendment, if people take the time to read it, they'll see that it actually does not abolish slavery, that it just transform it into prison slavery, from plantation, you know, slavery to prison slavery. And a lot of these prisons are on plantations, but because, and not only that, but this program that I'm doing here, because we report on a lot of serious issues, and I mean, it can get you down. It can make you depressed to see all of the suffering, to see all the evil, to see all the corruption in government. And, you know, it can get depressing. And so every once in a while, you know, even when I was in the United States military in a war zone, they gave us 3 days off to, you know, go to what they call R&R, rest and relaxation, because you need to energize. Your war is hell. You know what I'm saying? War is draining on you emotionally, physically, and whatnot. And I view what we are engaged in as a war, as I call this Battlefield America. So it is good that you all have found a way to incorporate elements into the movement to make it fun and make it, even yeah, though it's addressing serious issues, but it's addressing them in a not so serious manner all the time, where people can, you know, sit back and admire the work of others while getting fed a message. So I appreciate that. Did you have anything that, in closing, that you would like to leave with the listeners? And we hope this won't be your last time visiting us here on Black Talk Radio News.
Definitely not. I know you and I are set to have a conversation about the media component, and I'm looking forward to that. But I think for the listeners, the biggest thing I would say, I mean, I'm sure if you, you're probably already there, but definitely go to the website and remember the name. People keep leaving off the end or the middle or the something. So we gotta make sure we know where we're going. And the first word is LETS, L-E-T-S. And, you know, that whole concept is the spirit of unity or umoja. So LETS BY, B-U-Y, BLACK, B-L-A-C-K, 365, as in 365 days a year, so not just on Black Friday or not just for the holidays or not just for a season. Let's Buy Black 365.com is the website. And in addition to going to the website, you know, we have a call to action out. You know, if getting involved with this movement is something that people are interested in, they can email the email address getinvolved@letsbuyblack365.com. And people can, if you want to reach me directly, I'm I'm primarily working with the people in the D.C. Maryland area, but I do work with some of the other people also. If you want to just reach me for any reason directly, that number is 301-244-9072. Again, 301-244-9072. And you can also, of course, go onto the site, log in, and send me a friend request directly in Let's Buy Black 365, because we didn't have time to even touch on the fact that, you know, you can meet this network of people. It's a free, almost social media, and it's social in a sense, but it's all about, you know, things that, that help and uplift our people. So go ahead, log in, you know, you can join a group, you can see, you know, you can participate in the contest, you can do all those different kinds of things. You can see how many businesses you have posted and others have posted once the site actually, once the launch happens, and you can go ahead in now and, you know, like you said, you're doing, you have business cards, you can add businesses, you can tell people to go in and add their own businesses, but anyone can add any business they've ever come in contact with and, you know, and start to be a part of the solution to the economic problems that have been facing our community, and feel good knowing that you contributed to something so positive. So that would be, you know, my suggestion. And of course, as anything, spread the word. You know, there are pictures, there are links, you know, tell other people about the contest, maybe get your social group or your friends group or your church group or your mosque group or whatever group you're affiliated with, and, you know, work on a piece. I think you can do group pieces. You just split the prize money, or you could do a solo piece. But, you know, make it an effort where you're talking to people, because, again, this is about community. So you don't have to do it, like, silently alone, although you can. But, you know, get out and start the dialogue and say, you know, let's all commit to, in the next 3 days, we're going to write a piece, and we'll shoot our little you know, performance and upload it and see who gets the most votes, and make it all about Black economic empowerment and how that is the solution to everything else we have going on with us.
Again, people, so the website is letsbuyblack365.com. Letsbuyblack365.com. And Miss Nataki, thank you again for joining us, and I will be staying in touch with you.
All right. We'll see you online.
All right. You have a blessed day.
Yeah.
All right. That concludes our interview. I'm going to take another station identification break, kick some message music, and then when I come back, I want to share some commentary on these two news items. I do have a clip of Ben Carson speaking at this forum that was hosted by one of the BET personalities, and no, Black Entertainment Television isn't black owned, but they had one of their media personalities host this event in South Carolina. I think it occurred yesterday or the day before yesterday at Allen University. Again, that's in South Carolina. And he had a pretty interesting exchange with the person. And so I want to talk about Ben Carson and his view. I feel like he's minimizing police terrorism and racism. But then I started thinking about it more deeply, and being a person who at one time was immersed into that evangelical scene, that whole, you know, those people kind of have a different perspective of the world. You could even say they live in their own world and whatnot. And it's not all negative, but at the same time, it can blind them to the realities of the world in which they do live in. And so I want to play that comment. I think Ben Carson, perhaps, I don't know for sure, but perhaps he is a victim of a lot of misinformation. I think that he was identified as a person who the right-wing evangelical community could attach itself to and put him out front to push their agenda. Because some of the things that he says, I just feel like, you know, is he really ignorant? Is he uninformed? Or is he putting on an act? Or, you know, I can't call it one way or the other. But listening to this clip, it kind of seems like, you know, Maybe he just is really not aware of what's going on in the black community. So we'll check those out. Remember, Tando Radio Show will be coming on at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Brother Day's topic will be, and I'll give that to you here in just a second, economy and military war plans that are happening right now. So make sure that you keep a lock right here on Black Talk Radio Network for Tando Radio Show today at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. And while I'm not sure, they had last week off, but I think Why You Mad Son Radio, one of our media partners out of New York, will be on air tonight on the station at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. So y'all keep it locked. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on the other side.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
I would like to make a few comments concerning the difference between the Black Revolution and the Negro Revolution. There's a difference. Are they both the same? And if they're not, what is the difference? What is the difference between a Black Revolution and a Negro Revolution? First, what is a revolution? Sometimes I'm inclined to believe that many of our people are using this word revolution loosely, without taking careful consideration what this word actually means and what its historic characteristics are. When you study the historic nature of revolution, the motive of a revolution, the objective of a revolution, and the result of a revolution, and the methods used in a revolution, you may change words, you may devise another program, you may change your goal, and you may change your mind. Look at the American Revolution in 1776. That revolution was for what? For land. How was it? Why did they want land? Independence. How was it carried out? Bloodshed. Number one, it was based on land, the basis of independence. And the only way they could get it was bloodshed. The French Revolution, what was it based on? The landless against the landlord. What was it for? Land. How did they get it? Bloodshed. Was no love lost. Was no compromise. Was no negotiation. I'm telling you, you don't know what a revolution is. Because when you find out what it is, you'll get back in the alley. You'll get out of the way. The Russian Revolution. What was it based on? Land. The landless against the landlord. How did they bring it about? Bloodshed. You haven't got a revolution that doesn't involve bloodshed. And you're afraid to bleed. I said you're afraid to bleed. Long as the white man sent you to Korea, you bled. He sent you to Germany, you bled. He sent you to the South Pacific to fight the Japanese, you bled. You bleed for white people. But when it comes time to seeing your own churches being bombed and little black girls murdered, you haven't got no blood. You bleed when the white man says bleed. You bite when the white man says bite. And you bark when the white man says bark.
I hate to say this about us, but it's true. How you gonna be nonviolent in Mississippi as violent as you were in Korea? How can you justify being nonviolent in Mississippi and Alabama when your churches are being bombed and your little girls are being murdered, and at the same time you're gonna get violent with Hitler and Tojo and somebody else that you don't even know? Violence is wrong in America, violence is wrong abroad. It is wrong to be violent, defending black women and black children and black babies and black men. Then it's wrong for America to draft us and make us violent abroad in defense of her. And if it is right for America to draft us and teach us how to be violent in defense of her, then it is right for you and me to do whatever is necessary to defend our own people right here in this country.
And welcome back. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. This is Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc. You just heard some message music there with Malcolm X talking about the difference between a black revolution and a Negro revolution. Do want to remind you, especially if you're in the D.C. area, on December the 9th, there will be a tremendous fraud that will be taking place in the halls of Congress as they will be commemorating the 150th anniversary of the 13th Amendment, the passage of the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which, contrary to popular belief, popular myths, and whatnot, did not abolish slavery. I know that that's what was taught to you by your teachers through public education and even in higher education and whatnot. On Speaker Ryan's page, y'all know Paul Ryan, the new Speaker of the House, on the Speaker of the House page where they talk about this 150th commemoration that they will be having, which will also include all the, you know, leaders in the Congress of the various parties and whatnot who will be participating in this continued fraud to make you think that the United States abolished slavery in 1865 when all they actually did was just transform it. They transformed it from private hands to state hands as well as federal hands with federal private prisons. I actually found out the first private prison was built before 1865. So they I'm thinking about Sister Nataki talking about, you know, a 1-year plan, 2-year plan, 5-year plan. So they had a 5-year plan of, you know, acting like they were going to abolish slavery, but actually transformed it into prison slavery. And so, you know, on that page of Speaker Ryan's House or .gov page or whatever, he posts the partial quote from the 13th Amendment, which is only two sections. It has two sections, and each section might only be one sentence long, but, you know, instead of publishing the entire sentence of the section one of 13th Amendment, he just posted the part that said slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished in the United States and all jurisdictions or all territories subject to its jurisdiction. And he left out the most important part, which is the exception clause that says it will be abolished except for punishment for a crime where a person has been duly convicted. And that's not an oversight on his part. That's purposely done because they know they have not abolished slavery whatsoever. And these movies by Steven Spielberg about Lincoln and whatnot, these movies about the Civil War and glory, and even though I enjoyed that movie immensely, it was still helping to cement this fraud in our minds that the United States abolished slavery. It is not mass incarceration that we face, but a continuation of our enslavement in this country. And, you know, if I was able to travel to Congress, to Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, I certainly would do my best to interrupt their little party and expose them for the frauds that they are. You know, I've already been tweeting at them and telling them to cancel this fraudulent event. You know, just continuing to perpetrate this myth that you abolished slavery when you did not, when you should actually be working on amending the 13th Amendment to remove that exception clause. All right. So, I want to keep mentioning that as much as possible so that you won't be fooled by that fraud. Now, I want to move on to the next story, as you may have heard, as it has been all over the news here lately, about Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, former member, chief of staff of the Obama administration and whatnot. I found out yesterday that he actually got his start in politics working for the corrupt what is Richard Daley's administration in Chicago. Very corrupt administration, and that's where Rahm Emanuel got his start in politics, and he's continuing on that path of corruption. But he has been feeling the heat from all the protesters and organizers on the ground there who are rightfully protesting the cover-up of the murder of 17-year-old Laquan McDonald, and how they were not going to bring his killer to justice, but gave him a desk job and paid him for an entire year to play Tetris on his smartphone or whatever, collecting a paycheck behind a desk so that, you know, people will forget that he murdered Laquan McDonald. And so Rahm Emanuel, feeling the heat, I guess trying to save his own neck, has offered up Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy, who was fired today. It has been confirmed he has been fired. It was an appointed position, so he wasn't elected. He was appointed by Rahm Emanuel. He hired him so he can fire him, and he fired him today. But I'm like the other activists who I'm connected to through social media. Some of them have been guests on this program out of Chicago, and they saying, oh, no, not so fast, buddy. You need to go as well. And so the calls for the resignation of Rahm Emanuel continue. Now, on the in underreported news, and this has been an issue in Chicago for quite some time, is the school closures. And if you will visit us on Facebook, our Facebook page, Black Talk Radio Network on Facebook, and let me just pull it up right quick because I feel like it's important and I should take this opportunity to tell you about it while I'm talking about Chicago. But school closings have long been an issue in Chicago. I remember the impassioned speech given by the young black male student there and saying, you know, stop shutting down our schools and provide us with the resources we need to get a proper education and whatnot. And so it is also being reported. Let me find it. I tell you, sometimes stuff disappears from our Facebook pages. I can't explain it, but it does happen. Things will disappear. Okay, here it is. CPS school closing plan announced for 2015 and 2016. It's a full list of the Chicago-based website, DNAinfo.com. That's DNAinfo.com. Has published a report today talking about the school closings. I'll just share a bit from that article with you. While all eyes were on Mayor Rahm Emanuel and departing Police Chief Gary McCarthy, whose resignation was announced late Tuesday morning, Chicago Public Schools released its list of proposed school closures and consolidations for the 2015-2016 school year. Up for a vote by the Chicago Board of Education in February will be the following proposed action. So this isn't, I stand corrected, This isn't a list of schools that have been closed, but schools that will be closed unless you can convince the Chicago Board of Education not to close the schools. So some of the proposed actions are the consolidation of Austin Polytechnical Academy, Austin Business and Entrepreneurship and Voice Academy, and a boundary change of Frederick A. Douglass Academy, a consolidation of Mary Mapes Dodge Renaissance Elementary Academy and Morton School of Excellence, and co-location of John Spry Community School with Maria Sosito Elementary School, Scholastic Academy, and Tappacali Elementary School. It has a very long list, so y'all might want to check that out, especially if you're in the Chicago area. This is a global broadcast, we do like to share local news from different locations and whatnot. So if you're one of our listeners in the Chicago area, in our Black Talk Radio listening family, that's something right there. Mark your calendar. That's coming up in February. And this is an issue, you know, again, bringing up New Abolitionist Radio and the different organizers and activists that we have talked to in relation to 21st century slavery and human trafficking. We have identified a pattern and practice of these states closing schools while building prisons, closing schools while building youth detention facilities. Oh, you ain't got no money to keep these schools open or provide those students with the resources that they need, but you certainly was able to find within your budget enough money to build a prison or a youth detention facility as you continue to practice slavery here in the 21st century. And policing is a part of that. People forget, or people don't know, that the first police department in Boston, Massachusetts, in the 1600s was comprised of people who were in the slave patrols. The slave patrols that not only patrol communities to make sure enslaved Africans weren't escaping and whatnot, but also to harass and brutalize free black people. You know, because there is this this other myth that makes a lot of people think, including black people, that every African descendant person on this continent was enslaved or is a descendant of an enslaved African. And that's just simply not the case. It's not true. But one thing is for certain, that whether you were a free black person or whether you were an enslaved African, you were suffering and still suffering under the system based on the myth of white supremacy. So let me move on to the next story. The next story is involving Ben Carson. Let me just close some of my windows before my computer locks up. That happens sometimes. But yeah, the next story is pertaining to the GOP candidate for president who's seeking the Republican nomination for president, Ben Carson. He recently participated in a forum that was held in South Carolina at Allen University. Now, a person who was sitting in the crowd recorded the entire event. It was like over an hour long, of course, but they recorded it. But I clipped it and just, you know, clipped the relevant portion that I wanted to focus on, and that is Ben Carson continues to have a problem with recognizing the fact that police terrorism isn't just a few isolated incidents and whatnot. It is part of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. Got to keep people terrorized and whatnot. And also, you know, his failure to recognize that institutional racism does exist in this country. And so the person might have used a cell phone and audio. It was really, really low, but I tried to enhance the audio as best I could. You should be able to make out what is being said here. So I will go ahead and cue that up and share that with you. Again, this is Ben Carson at the, let me pull it up. All right, here it is. He's at Allen University in South Carolina. This occurred over the past couple of days, and he's talking about, he's asked a question about social justice issues.
I appreciate very much your remarks. But I'll be honest, I did hear very much about justice, social justice, and the reason that so many of these people are here. So I want to give you an opportunity to talk about it.
So I'm sure you're going to ask me those questions.
Wonderful. let's get into it. And correct me if I'm wrong, I heard that you said at one point that even coming up, you've never had any bad experience with police. And listening to you talk, you mentioned that in many cases there are folks that are coming into the community, in many cases are using the media to talk about wars that don't exist. Help me understand, number one, why you think you didn't have any negative experiences. And if there is not a war, what would you call the issues of misconduct and the abuse that are not fictitious, but very real in certain
cases? Okay, well, I think probably the reason that I didn't have any problems, not because there weren't problems going on, but because, you know, I was taught by my mother to be very respectful of authority. And what we need to, and one of the things that I really took home from my visit to Ferguson is listening to some of the residents there. They said that one lady in particular, because she came out to her yard like 1 a.m, there were like police cars all over the place, and she went out there and said, "What's going on?" And the police officer said, "Go back in the house." But of course it concerns her because it's her neighborhood. And the police, we talked to them about that, and they did understand that they must be respectful also. But that's the thing that's lacking, is mutual respect. The community has to respect the police have to respect the community. And I think the other thing that really would make a huge difference is if police become people that you know. Early on, introduced regularly, so that Johnny's first experience was with a policeman playing kickball and not chasing him down college. I think that makes a huge difference that people actually go to them. Doesn't even matter what their race is when they go to them.
In communities where residency requirements are no longer the lay of the land, and municipalities don't require a member of a community, you know, police officer, what role do you think the federal government needs to play in ensuring that police departments, where they don't know each other, where they don't know the community members, where they aren't having a level of respect for those community members, what role does the federal government need to play in the Department of Justice or otherwise, and what would your administration do to deal with, especially departments that have repeated issues of police misconduct and force?
Well, I think we have to create programs that incentivize people in those communities to go into law enforcement. I'm told that that's a big problem. We don't seem to have a lot of people, particularly that, that want to go into law enforcement. But we've got to introduce them. Understand that this is a very honorable profession. Yes, to be a respected position for that committee. But there's been so much, malice now that perhaps did not look as one as friends anymore. When in fact, you know, if you go out and talk to them, and they really have a talk to this officer in Baltimore this summer. And he says, he makes it his own business to go into the community. He says everybody knows him. He says he doesn't have to ever spend it, right? They're always saying, "Officer Dow, come in and have lunch, come in and then." But, you know, people get to know you. And we just have to work together to foster that dynamic where we have people who are willing and able to go into those communities on a regular basis. The Justice Department will have to use its resources and any influence it has to try to do that. That's really going to be the solution to those relationships.
And I want to be clear on something, because you mentioned that you were raised to file a report, and that in many cases the relationship between both officers and the members and mutual respect helps to aspects of killing this issue in many cases. Are you saying that in most of the cases that you've seen, this is an issue of if someone in a community just did what the police said, that excessive force would not have happened?
I'm not aware of a lot of cases where a police officer just comes up to somebody like you and says, hey, I don't like you. I'll mistreat you. I said that to somebody a few weeks ago. And they said, oh, no, we have lots of cases like that. And I said, can you get me some evidence? I'm still waiting for the evidence.
I'll show you this in your writing.
I'm not saying that there are no bad prisons. I'm talking about a regular camp, okay? Of course there are some bad prisons. There are some bad doctors, there are some bad journalists, I don't know. There's some bad lawyers. You don't condemn the whole group and create policies based on the bad apples. I think that will always lead you into an area of unnecessary conflict.
So let's talk a little bit about mass incarceration. I think that there are many in the room and around the country that are interested in your take on decriminalization of certain crimes. I think for the first time in a long time, we're seeing bipartisan support for decriminalization of drug crimes and the removal of mandatory minimums. What is your take on that? And would you like to see the removal of mandatory minimums as a result of drug crimes?
Yeah, I don't like mandatory minimums at all because they don't take individual circumstances into account. Also, we have 5% of the world's population, 25% of the world's inmates. That should be something wrong. We have a prison system that is growing tremendously. It's a big industry, creating a lot of money and a lot of jobs. We should be doing that with these people. As I just said, you know, 330 million people, we can't afford to be throwing away large portions of our population, you know, to prison. Now, why do we have so many people who are addicted to drugs? We have to go back and realize that frequently, the thing that makes you very vulnerable is not having a positive life. It makes it much easier for you to get fall into a trap of addiction. Now that's a much more complex issue getting back into that strong families and things, but let's deal with the present. Present, we have people who are not violent criminals, who are being thrown into a place with violent crimes, where they can learn to become violent criminals, and then they come out and create more violent criminals. Now that makes absolutely no sense. We need to be treating them as individuals and forcing them. And we have the ability to do that. We also have the facilities to do that. We just need the will.
I want to open the floor because they have
Black Talk Radio News, Scotty Reed in for this broadcast. So that was Ben Carson, and I was taking some notes. Let me see, we only got about 17 minutes, maybe 15 minutes left in our time slot. But Ben Carson, now, he made some very insightful comments there towards the end about the drug war. But he was engaging in respectability politics there, saying, you know, that people should be respectful towards the police. But at least he acknowledged also, you know, the story of the lady in Ferguson when she came out of her house and police being disrespectful to her and talking about something don't concern her. She need to go back in the house. You know, that's not how you talk to people who's paying your salary. You know, and again, these cops and what, they don't have the attitude that they are public servants. No, that is not what they think they are. All right. And in fact, the Supreme Court has ruled that they are not there to protect and serve the public. What they are there for is to enforce laws. They are there to engage in slave catching, especially when you're talking about nonviolent, victimless, so-called drug crimes and whatnot. But yeah, you know, I teach my daughters, and whenever I've had interactions with police officers, I have been totally respectful. I'm yes, sir, no, sir, because I'm trying to get out of whatever it is they stopped me for, whether I was speeding, whether I didn't signal, whether this or that. You know, I'm trying to survive the encounter. And it's not a matter of me punking out or anything like that. No, it's just me using common sense and trying to survive the encounter and de-escalate the situation instead of escalating. Now, with that said, that still does not justify the brutality and the terrorism that we're seeing across this country. Laquan McDonald, he was told to do whatever he was told to do, and he didn't do it, and he kept walking. And he was walking away from the police officers, and there was no justification whatsoever because he didn't listen to their commands for them to execute him in the street like that. Last time I checked, there was no penalty of death for not following the commands of a police officer. Is it recommended that you follow these commands? Yes, it is, but it is not justification to murder someone who is not putting your life in danger or putting anyone else's life in danger, all right? And so that whole respectability, you know, I'm thinking of you know, that was used when the video of Sandra Bland's interaction with that police officer. She was agitated, you know, because the way this cop just pulled up on her, start riding her bumper, and she's pulling over thinking he's on his way to emergency, trying to get out the way, pull over to the right like they tell you to do whenever there's an emergency vehicle or something like that. So she didn't put on her signal as she was trying to hurry up and get out this speeding car's way that's coming up on her so fast. And so then, you know, he pulls her over and then wants to issue her a traffic citation or whatnot. And she was rightfully agitated. She was rightfully agitated. This has happened to me in the past where I've been in Charlotte, North Carolina, in the city, and, you know, cops be riding my bumper. And I'm talking about over the years, you know, I'm in my 40s now, about to hit 50 in a couple of more years. And I've had that happen to me where they will just, you know, bumper ride you. They could be giving tickets for following too closely. And what they're trying to do is make you nervous, make you make a mistake so that they can then, you know, meet one of their quotas for writing tickets and whatnot. And so that is a whole lot of what they're doing, policing for profit and whatnot. So it's not a matter of me being respectful. It wasn't a matter of Sandra Bland being respectful. She didn't have to put out her cigarette. She's in her vehicle. She's not in a public building or anywhere where smoking has been, you know, prohibited or anything. He overstepped his bounds. And so it's not about respectability, politics and whatnot. Now, this whole notion, and this is unfortunately something I've seen even come from the current activists and organizers that's out in the street saying we need more black cops or whatnot. Hell no, we don't. We don't need more black slave catchers to be enslaving black people in our community. All right. We don't need that. All right. I'm not saying that is not a solution. All I have to do is point you to the 6 police officers that are going to be standing trial for the killing of Freddie Gray. 3 of those cops were black. I can point you to the video of what's that cop named Michael Slager in North Charleston, murdering that black man that ran from him. I can't remember that man's name. There's so many victims and you know, and him being shot in the back like that. You know, and the black cop was who saw it, filed a false police report, backing up the white cops murdering, helping him cover it up. Okay. And so, you know, this whole notion of black cops, all we need is more black people in these positions. That is a lie. That is a lie. And nothing could be further from the truth. Being black does not mean that you are a person who practices justice. Doesn't mean you're conscious or whatnot. It's just your skin color. That's about it for some people. There are some people who are black who are totally anti-black and wish they were anything but black. You know, so, you know, he talks about policing being an honorable profession. No, it's not. That's just part of that propaganda that we can chalk up to the same myth about the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery. Police were created to police who? not white people, to police free black people. And they were recruited out of the slave patrols, and they still have the same mission to this day, to create new slaves for the new slave plantation called prison. So I don't look at it as an honorable position where you're a revenue generator for the city and all you're doing is just trying to meet a quota to target people so that you can fill up the coffers of the city so that they can continue to pay out bonuses and salaries and things of that nature. So I don't look at it as an honorable profession. There may be some honorable people here and there within that profession, but the profession itself is not honorable. It is not. Let me see. In his comments about, you know, police getting to know people in the community. Look, the Police Athletic League has been around since I was a child. You know, the baseball leagues, football, and all of that. So you have had police interacting with the community through athletics and other such programs like that. So it's not like these people are not interacting. But look, has Police Athletic Leagues, PAL, I think is what it's called, have those led to, you know, improve community relations between the police and the people they are policing? No, it has not. All right. And then that reminded me of Loretta Lynch when I played her comments on a past program where she was talking about we need this program where, you know, we create, like, let's say, like a Boy Scout program, but it would be run by the police where you're raising, you know, future police and whatnot. That's what it sounds like, you know. And maybe black people, a number of people, don't want to become cops because it's not an honorable profession. You know, I was looking at this video from a Iraqi war veteran who had gotten a Purple Heart, and he now cooks for KFC as a cook for KFC, and he's participating in the movement to raise the minimum wage to $15 and whatnot. And then this person said, you know what, I'm a veteran, but I don't agree with his whining. You know, he got the GI Bill. Why doesn't he go, you know, do this or do that? And he doesn't have to work for KFC or whatnot. And so, you know, well, everybody doesn't want to use their combat skills to then come and use those skills against the American people, against their own communities. Because the Oval Office, the executive branch of USA Inc., does have a program that gives preferential hiring practices to veterans. All right. And many of these people got PTSD. All right. Who knows how many people they have killed on the battlefield? Want to talk about addiction? I believe people can get addicted to killing. And perhaps that has something to do with why these people are killing so many American citizens, over 1,000 a year. And we don't even have the true numbers. And so everybody don't want to be a cop. Everybody don't want to be a ticket writer, revenue generator for the city, trampling the rights of their fellow citizens who just want to live in peace. Again, I heard a former cop say that cops should be like firemen. Don't leave the station until you're called, because they do not prevent crime. That's evident, because if they were, you know, preventing crime, then, you know, it wouldn't be no crime. So that's like an oxymoron. They do not prevent crime. And then a lot of the stuff they arresting people on shouldn't even be classified as crime. The drug laws that you heard, and it was good to hear Mr. Carson saying that this is ridiculous. We shouldn't be locking up all of these people. And, you know, again, this isn't mass incarceration. This is slavery. And perhaps he needs to be educated on the 13th Amendment and why the United States has the world's largest prison slave labor force. He will know of that Walmart uses prison slave labor to repackage all of the returns of products that they're going to get after the Christmas holiday season. They will know that Jake from State Farm is a fake and that the real Jake is on a prison plantation farm, answering the customer service phone calls of State Farm, of Sprint, of Verizon, of AT&T. All right. So, you know, this whole thing about we need more cops. No, we need less cops. We need to be laying cops off because we need to be repealing these drug laws and whatnot. If an individual doesn't harm another individual, if he doesn't, you know, violate another person's or she violates another person's life, liberty, or property, then to me it's not a crime. If a person wanna on their own property grow cannabis, who are they harming? They're not harming me. They're not harming you. That's their land. That's their property. And at one time in this country, it was required that you grow cannabis because of its not only recreational, medicinal properties, but its industrial properties. So a lot of this stuff, we should be seeing cops laid off if we can repeal these unconstitutional, unjust laws. So he has a lot to go, but I'm starting to think, I don't know, I'm just trying to get a man the benefit of the doubt, that he is just terribly misinformed on a lot of issues. It seems like he's getting informed about the drug war, and as a doctor, he's saying, you know, these people are sick. This is an addiction. Addiction, you know, you shouldn't be locking up people for an addiction. You should be getting them help. So he apparently is educated on that aspect of it, but he needs to be further educated on the origins of policing in this country and what their job actually is. Because he's probably the victim of the media program and the propaganda, just like the rest of us. And like Malcolm X has said, you know, don't fault somebody for not knowing what you know, because at one time you didn't know what you knew, what you know now. So I'm going to cut him some slack. I'm going to cut him a little bit of slack. But then at the same time, I'm like, come on, man. Come on. All of these police snuff films that's circulating the internet. So again, this goes back to my opening comments for the program about evangelicals. See, because I come from a family that was, you know, I was raised in the church. And at one time, I even preached a couple of sermons in the church. And then I left organized religion over 20 years ago. And I can tell you from being a part of that subset of the black community, a lot of these people are oblivious to what is really going on in the world. They just seem to think that you can just, you know, quote some scriptures and speak some positive words and that they're just going to come into existence. And that's not the case. That is not the case. Even the Bible tells you that work with faith without works is dead. So you can't say that, you know, policing is going to get better in this country by just stating that and then not put in the work. So he probably lives in a bubble in that evangelical community, which I think are the ones who probably recruited him to get involved in politics. You know, like what's that guy named, the pastor, the former governor of Arkansas? His name escapes me right now, but he is usually, you know, quoted in the media for saying something racist, saying something misogynistic, saying something that indicates he's a religious bigot. Yeah, I know Mike Huckabee, that's who I'm talking about. See, Ben Carson first became known from his books that he wrote, and, you know, in the books he talks about his faith. And so, you know, my mom, that, you know, she told me that's how she found out about him. Her and some of her friends had bought the book that he went to go see him speak before he got into politics. He was on the, let's call it the religious chitlin circuit or whatever, you know, where, you know, these different religious people, they have these conferences and whatnot, have all these speakers and whatnot. And I believe that right wing so-called Christians who practice racism, all right, I think they recruited him. They recruited him. They said, hey, we know the GOP, the Republican Party, has a problem with overt racism and whatnot. So we're going to showcase a couple of black people and whatnot. And then, you know, we can pretend like, you know, we're making an effort to do an outreach to the black community by showcasing some black people like Ben Carson. So I think that he probably did not ever want to go into politics. I don't know. I haven't heard anybody talk about it. I haven't read his book or whatnot. Seems to me he always wanted to be a surgeon and whatnot. And politics was an afterthought. I think he was recruited into that I think that he has been given a lot of false information by these right-wing groups and being misinformed and being fed anti-blackness. Now, some of that he could brought to the table on his own, because I think a lot of times, you know, most of the time, we are bombarded with anti-black messages via the media, via education or indoctrination and whatnot. So I don't know. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, but we're going to keep our eyes on him. Proxy racism is proxy racism, whether you're doing it knowingly or unknowingly. All right, that's the conclusion of my program. Do want to remind you to visit the website, lessbyblack365.com, lessbyblack365.com, where you can become involved in the movement. All right, so check that out. We want to thank Sister Nataki for joining us today and spending time dialoguing on the issue of black empowerment through economics. All right, recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines. It's a battlefield out there. Casualties are being created every day. And so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become one of those casualties, you need to develop codification. You need to develop battlefield skills, situational awareness, all right, so that you can not become a 21st century slave or a dead black body laying out there in the streets of America. With that said, peace and blessings to all. Y'all stay tuned. Tando Radio Show is coming right up.
They just hope that he'll never wake up, because they never want to meet him on the back.
What is y'all?